Chapter 29, Bhakti Yoga, text 5. Tam tva kilat madai te shradam asritanam. Samatradam sakita vid visajeta konu. Bhaja kimapi vismritaye nubhutyaye. Kimba bhavena sabha bhara rajo jusamna. Tam, that, twa, you, akila, of all, atma, zvrizo, daita, the most dear, Ishvaram, and the supreme control. Ashritanam, of those who take shelter of you. Sarvabharata, of all perfections. Dham, the bestower. Sakrita, the benefit you have given. Vit, who knows. Visrijeta, can reject. Ka, who? Nu, indeed. Ka, who? Va, or. Vajay, can accept. Kimapi, anything. Vismritaye, for forgetfulness. Anu, consequently. Ujjai, for sense gratification. Kim, what? Va, or. Bhave is na, not. Tava, your. Pada, of the lotus feet. Raja, the dust. Jusham, for those who are serving. Na, ourselves. Translation. Who then could dare reject you, the very soul, the most dear object of worship, and the supreme Lord of all? You, who give all possible perfections to the devotees who take shelter of you, who could be so ungrateful, knowing the benefits you bestow? Who would reject you and accept something for the sake of material enjoyment, which simply leads to forgetfulness of you? And what lack is there for us who are engaged in the service of the dust of your lotus feet? Purport. As stated in the Narayaniya of the Moksha Dharma in Sri Mahabharata, Yavai Sadhana Sampatsti Purusharta Chuchushtaye Tayavina Taravnoti Naro Narayanashraya. Whatever among the four goals of human life can be achieved by various spiritual practices is automatically achieved without such endeavors by the person who has taken shelter of Lord Narayana, the refuge of all persons. Thus, a Krishna conscious person knows that he will obtain all perfection of life simply by surrendering to the devotional service of Lord Krishna. This is the highest stage of yoga, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Om Agya Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurmilitanyena tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nittana Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaurava Devrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Uddhava is speaking and he's expressing some things to Lord Krishna. One of the processes of bhakti given in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is to open one's heart to the deity. The best way to start that process is by utilizing the heart-opening supplications and prayers by the authorized devotees of the Lord. Certainly you'll find something in your reading of the Shastra that will easily match what your heart is currently going through. It's all there in the Shastra. Because bhakti involves all aspects of our person, even that person as materially known. In the beginning of this chapter, Uddhava expresses that generally those yogis who try to steady the mind experience frustration because of their inability to perfect the state of trance. Thus they weary in their attempt to bring the mind under control. This can also happen to bhakti yogis. Suffering comes to the mind. So-called happiness comes to the mind. So the mind is the central place through which you experience the afflictions known as material existence. Well, sometimes our practitioners, our devotees, they become weary of struggling with the mind. How long can I go on like this? My mind is just not becoming purified. I'm staggering under its burden. When will I ever get relief? Doesn't Krishna understand? I'm trying, but my mind is so wild. Now I think it's hopeless. Let us consider that that position will ultimately be gotten by someone who tries to control the mind by other methods than bhakti. So if we're having difficulty with the mind, we should make sure we're not struggling with it like a gyani, taking it on hand-to-hand combat. Okay, mind, I'm going to battle you. I'm going to smash you and make you my friend. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, the mind is the worst enemy. We were speaking about this point at our annual Christmas festival in New Zealand. You may not realize it because you think, I'm a bhakti yogi. I'm not trying to solve my problems in life like some kind of dry gyani or metaphysical yogi or mystic power yogi. I'm doing devotional service. So then why is my mind gobbling me up sometimes? And why do I weary of battling it? You say no, no, no. The mind says yes, yes, yes. The mind says no, no, no. You say yes, yes, yes. When will it ever end? How to deal with this? But you cannot deal with the mind on its own level. That's a big mistake. And it shows some pride, some residue of pride that we have in us. I'm an intelligent person. I'm sincere. I'm doing all the things that everyone else is doing. Why is my mind troubling me so much? In other words, what you're ascribing to yourself, what you're attributing to yourself, is the ability to handle your own mind. Because otherwise, does that mean I'm insane? Dementia or something? Are you trying to say I can't handle my own mind? Are you trying to say I'm some kind of wild person, ready for the asylum? Of course I can handle my mind. It's me. To admit that we cannot handle our mind directly is not a sign of failure. In fact, it's the beginning of progress. We need to strive by right means. And those right means are not to tackle the mind directly and try to fight it out on the mind's own level. You'll lose, you'll become weary, you'll give up. Like the gyani yogis, eventually become weary. And they go back to material activities. The mystic yogis become frustrated. Even if they happen to acquire mystic cities, mystic perfections, they become frustrated. We don't battle the mind directly. We engage our mind and senses in devotional service. We focus on the whole package, all aspects of our being to Krishna. The more effectively we do that, the more the mind becomes submissive. And there has to be some patience, some tolerance. Appreciate the countless births that we've spent polluting our mind. If we develop our spiritual intelligence, Buddhi Yoga, then we have a level above the mind. We can kind of watch the movements of the mind and don't take it so seriously. Or if the situation with the mind seems to become threateningly serious, we know with our intelligence, that means going up on another level, how to deal with it. If you just bathe your intelligence in Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, you'll find that gradually the mind becomes under control again due to superior dictation, superior force. The Bhagavatam is superior force. You just have to saturate your mind long enough with it, and you'll see. In the beginning, it may be a little rocky, because the last thing that the material energy wants you to do is effectively take shelter of Krishna. So you're going to experience some rockiness at first, like you're trying to exorcise a demon. That's just to throw you off the trail. If you persist, you'll be victorious. So the purpose of the Association of Devotees is to allow you to be victorious. Anything can be tolerated in good association. I always point out, as Srila Prabhupada commented. So look around the quality of your association, and that will also indicate your ability to conquer the mind or not. In good association, the intelligence becomes fortified, you become inspired. You see how other devotees are, and you pray to Krishna, please give me their qualities. I can see it can happen. So you strengthen the intelligence. You don't fight the mind directly one to one. You'll fail. You'll get weary. You'll become exhausted. And you'll blame the bhakti process, which is not fair. And of course, all aspects of our being, all aspects of our existence, the more effectively they're connected to Krishna, the more the mind, the material mind, is starved. Especially if that devotional service is selfless. Unless we master selfless devotional service, we cannot understand Radha and Krishna and their loving affairs. No amount of artificial arrangement will compensate. At some point, the practitioner has to cross the bridge to the land of selfless devotional service and start to walk. Then, the anartas, those unwanted things in the heart, will effectively start to reduce. The whole point of doing devotional service that's a bit selfish, you expect something for yourself in return also. You're doing what you like to do and offering it to Krishna. That's fine. But the point of that is to lead to the land of selfless devotional service. The more selflessly we absorb ourselves in devotional service, the more our taste for Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, develops. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Syamaha Sevaya Vipra. It's stated in the beginning of Bhagavatam that by rendering service, selfless service to the great soul, you get the katha ruchi, you get the ruchi, the taste for hearing about Krishna, for talking about Krishna. And the more you hear about Krishna and talk about Krishna, the more impetus you feel for selfless devotional service. We want to relish an opportunity to sacrifice for Krishna. That is our life and soul. You'll hear in tomorrow's purport how Krishna is 10 million times more dear to the devotee than the devotee's own life. Now think about that. 10 million times dear to my own life. This is how powerful bhakti is. That point is explained by Srila Jiva Goswami. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that if you had the time of 1,000 universal creations, you still could not pay back your debt to Krishna for being awarded devotional service. What are we doing? What is this world that's been given to us, this world of bhakti, that 1,000 universal creations would not allow us time to pay back the debt for our being able to engage in Krishna's service? That engagement in Krishna's service in a selfless way is what cracks the mind, the material mind, breaks up the hard shell. And even though sometimes in the process of your doing so, the mind may seem to rage a bit, it's very weakened. It's made feeble. Because you how to give pleasure to Krishna, how to sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure. It's like you have another lover, and so if you're married, and so your relationship with your husband or wife becomes feeble, and the other person can tell what's happening. There's something missing in our relationship. It seems your energies are going elsewhere. The other person can tell that. So similarly, if we have that desire for a yajna, sacrifice, or selfless devotional service, the grip the material energy has on us slackens. We become not so interested in our own material motivations. So let us not become weary about our battling our mind. Let's realize how to strive by the correct means. That means engage all our senses in the service of the master of the senses. You see, the yoga system, like Ashtanga Yoga, of which Hatha Yoga is a part, brings you to the platform where you have a chance to subdue your mind. And then the whole purpose of having a subdued mind is that you can then engage in Krishna's service. But bhakti starts off at that topmost level. You engage in Krishna's service. You don't do anything preparatory. So, the bhakti yogi doesn't directly battle the mind in order to get to the point of devotional service. This is a common mistake. And often devotees become discouraged. Oh, my mind, when will it ever become? Battle my mind and then engage in devotional service. No, we are bhakti yogis. You get the platform of devotional service immediately. You don't have to go through the lower steps of the yoga ladder. Bhakti yoga is about more than just peace. Once Srila Prabhupada commented, peace, everyone wants peace. The fruitive worker, the karmic worker, wants peace through karmic activity. The mystic yogi wants peace through acquiring mystic powers. The jnana yogi wants peace by speculating that he or she is equal to Brahman. And that's it. There's no other truth beyond that. But only the bhakti yogi is peaceful, genuinely. Because the bhakti yogi knows how to engage in devotional service for Krishna's satisfaction. You get that chance immediately. You don't have to go through so many preliminary yoga practices battling the mind. Just always think, how can Krishna get pleasure? And even from time to time your mind acts up, you can keep it in place. And of course, part of that devotional service is chanting the holy name of Krishna. When we chant, we are expressing our desire to engage in Krishna's service. We are expressing our gratitude for devotional service. We look at this verse here, and we see, who then could dare reject you, the very soul, the most dear object of worship, and the Supreme Lord of all? Who then could dare to reject you? Well, that is the story of material existence, rejection of Krishna. Now, think about it. Do you really accept that all problems are caused by rejecting Krishna? Can it really be that? Or is this just some kind of religious belief that kind of fits nicely for where we're at presently? Can't say in 5 years from now. All problems are caused by rejection of Krishna. To understand this point, we need to understand who is Krishna. Then you can see why Uddhava exclaims, who then could dare reject you? The very soul, the most dear object of worship, the soul of our soul, the self of the self. How can you reject that and expect to function properly? We're busy looking throughout material existence for the love of our life. But meanwhile, we've rejected the self of the self, the most dear one. You who give all possible perfection to the devotees who take shelter of you. In the purport, we find a verse quoted from Mahabharata. Whatever among the four goals of human life can be achieved by various spiritual practices is automatically achieved without such endeavors by the person who has taken shelter of Lord Narayana, the refuge of all persons. What are those four goals of human life? Sometimes this seems a bit abstract and theoretical because you don't have human life today. So therefore, when devotees hear about the four goals of human life, it sounds kind of distant. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma, religion. Following the laws of the Supreme for the sake of happiness. For the sake of living with prosperity. Dharma, artha. Yes, religion leads to economic development. Everyone can relate to that. And then, with economic development, what do? Sit in meditation? No, karma. You enjoy your senses. The senses of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And then, finally, you decide, I want freedom from material existence, whatever that is. These are the four goals of human life. Where are those goals today? You don't see this Purusharta, these four goals, because you don't have human civilization. This is a very humiliating point. There's no human civilization today. Unless we become educated, we can't understand that. These books are giving us in the Western world, for the first time, some genuine, in-depth spiritual knowledge. There's so much bewilderment and confusion about human civilization and what it should do because the Western world lacks genuine spiritual knowledge. They get a little trace. And even that little bit, they've confused so much. So for the first time in known history of the Western world, you have a genuine fund of spiritual knowledge to tap into, with a fund with depth. we can understand what is the actual standard of human life, human civilization, then we'll agree. There's no human civilization today. There's no dark art of Russia, and Bach is far beyond that. Mahaprabhu has given us the fifth goal. Prema, prema, pumatama, love of God. The fifth goal, the ultimate goal of life. In a different category from dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Religion for the sake of prosperity, for the sake of sense gratification, and then you get tired and think, I want relief from material existence somehow. Bhakti is far beyond even relief from material existence. This is the quality of devotional service that we're engaged in. So Uddhava goes on. Who could be so ungrateful knowing the benefits you bestow? But that's the catch. Knowing the benefits you bestow. That requires education and application of the education. Gratitude is a necessary part of spiritual development, just as regret is. One regrets his or her sinful activities, and one is grateful for the opportunity to have devotional service. Who would reject you and accept something for the sake of material enjoyment, which simply leads to forgetfulness of you? So again, we need to understand the valuelessness of material enjoyment. That requires a lot of education. Otherwise, you'll not understand this. Who would reject you and accept something for the sake of material enjoyment? The standard today is everything for the sake of material enjoyment. Who would reject material enjoyment for the sake of poverty? We still need to remember it's a Krishna. Reject you and accept something for the sake of material enjoyment, which simply leads to forgetfulness of you. Uddhava in this verse is laying down the standard so you can evaluate anything but forgetfulness of Krishna. Forgetfulness of Krishna is the worst thing. And material existence is 100% about forgetfulness of Krishna. It's an impossible task to forget about Krishna. Even Krishna has to help you to do it. This is how tiny you are. You can't forget Krishna without Krishna's help. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Matta Smitir Gyanam Bhavanam Cha. From me comes not only knowledge and remembrance, but from me also comes forgetfulness. Krishna, when he sees you're determined to forget him, he has to help you. There was some song back in the 50s, 40s, I think, even before I was born. Some lady is singing, I'm going to wash that man out of my hair. Signifying, I've got to get him out of my mind, get him out of my mind. Wash him out of my hair. In other words, it's hard. And the person is hoping it would be that easy. Well, how much harder is it? Inconceivably, incalculably harder to wash Krishna. So, how dare it supposed to be? You can't do it because you're his part. Mamayam cho jiva bhute, jiva bhuta sanatana. You're his part eternally. So, in order to wash Krishna out of your hair, so to speak, you need his help. And he regretfully, reluctantly, gives you that help. Otherwise, you can't do it. It's such a weird, strange position to forget Krishna. But we think it's normal. We look around and see billions of people in this world forgetting Krishna. And it's so easy to make fun of Krishna. It looks normal. We don't see the spiritual world. We don't see the majority of living entities. We don't see the majority of terrain, territories. We just see a little tiny sliver of material existence and think it indicates normality. We don't see the big picture at all. Uddhava continues, and what lack is there for us who are engaged in the service of the dust of your lotus feet? What lack is there? So you ask yourself that question. Let's not unconsciously have some dissatisfaction with Krishna and Krishna's service. I'm lacking something. What has Krishna not given me? Krishna ought to know better. If I'm to be enthusiastic in devotional service, he should give me this, he should give me that. Why don't we look at the situation and see? Actually, not lacking anything. Certainly, if I am dedicated to the Lord's service in due course of time, he'll give me everything I need to make spiritual advancement. That's a trusting relationship. Who wants a relationship with someone who is always feeling, this is lacking. You're lacking. You're not giving me everything I need. I've done that. Who wants that kind of relationship? You always get this feeling of failure. The other person is always putting trips on you. You're lacking this. Our relationship is lacking that. Finally, you just... Why would we do that to Krishna? We need proper vision to see that nothing is lacking. And gratitude for being able to engage in devotional service. A feeling of indebtedness that can't be paid during 1,000 universal creations. That's how valuable devotional service is. In the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, after the Brahma Vimohana Lila, after the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, he makes prayers. And near the end of his prayers, he says, my mind is boggled, I'm totally bewildered, thinking, how could there be any other reward than you? You are the embodiment of all creations, of all rewards. Now, Brahma has already totally been bewildered when he thought he was stealing the cows and cowherd boys. But in his prayers, after that bewilderment was resolved, he confesses another bewilderment. He says, how could anyone think that there is some other reward to have other than you when you are the embodiment of all benedictions? And then he really nails the case shut, so to speak. And just think, you gave yourself to Putana Rakshasi and her family. What is left to give to the residents of Vrindavan who have loved you and so selflessly and sacrificed everything for you? What do you have left to give them? You've already given yourself to the witch Putana. You gave her a position in Goloka Vrindavan equal to your own mother Yashoda. In other words, Lord Brahma is pointing out that the Lord is also indebted to his devotees. That's why Krishna told his dearest devotees, the consorts in Vrindavan, I cannot repay your selfless service even in the lifetime of Lord Brahma. Just be satisfied with that service. Just be satisfied with service. I thought service was supposed to get us to a point where we get things. But here, Krishna, at a peak moment in the most confidential part of the pastime, just be satisfied with your service. This shows you the value, the incalculable value of devotional service. The Lord Brahma is saying, since you gave so much to Kusala, who disguised herself as a witch, disguised herself as a beautiful mother and offered you breast milk in order to kill you with poison, you gave yourself to her. What are you going to do to compensate the residents of Vrindavan with their selfless service? Of course, that selfless service is a reward, is the reward in of itself. Everything depends on your definition of happiness. We'll be speaking about that this weekend at New Nandagram. What actually is happiness? We spoke about it at our annual retreat in Kimiloka. But we're going to speak about it again this weekend, tailor-made for the audience, because it really hangs people up. I want to be happy. Does bhakti have something against happiness? Well, we need to understand what is happiness. So in order to evaluate whether your atheist moralist is happy, you have to know what happiness is. And that's a whole discussion. Material happiness has a little something to it. We give credit where credit's due. There's a tiny something there. A drop of water on the lotus flower, and that drop of, just that one little tiny drop of water can fall off any moment. So there's a drop. And this is why I become frustrated and agitated. How can you say that? I remember 2 weeks ago, I had a good time. Remember last year's family together before the. We were happy then, right? You could just tell by their language. It was a great time yesterday. Meanwhile, today is. Give credit where credit is due. Prahlad Maharaj, the 5-year-old super yogi, he does that. He says, sukham hi tucham. That so-called happiness is so insignificant, it's not worth talking about. Just like on your nice saffron cloth, that there was just a tiny spot of something. Maybe like what happens to me, you're drinking spirulina and sometimes a little green dot splatters out onto your cloth. Those people can't see it. So insignificant. That's what Prahlad Maharaj says about things deemed to be the essence of happiness. He just dismisses. So insignificant. So if you want to argue and fight about something so tiny, something so insignificant, and make a big deal, that's why Prahlad says, a person like that, their inclinations, Matirna Krishna Padatasvatova, their inclinations to Krishna will never be aroused because they're so determined to cling to that drop. They get defensive about it. They get aggressive about it. They use their academic intelligence to justify it. So this is what you see going on. So therefore you have to have the time to patiently explain what is real happiness. And don't think people are so bright, even if they have so many academic degrees. Sometimes you just have to pop a samosa in their mouth or something. Let them chant and dance. In Kaliyuga, people aren't so bright. Only a man can embrace meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling as a source of happiness. You have to be mad. Anything else? Yes. Without guidance will be subject to bewilderment. You're trying to be spiritual within the material world. As I've often explained, it's like trying to remain dry while living underwater. So, inbuilt with the bhakti system is the need for guidance. Because self-deception is a very powerful thing. Teenagers, you'll see how they insist on inventing the world as if it never existed. No one knows what it's going through. It's so unique as a teenager, what we're feeling. No one understands. Our parents don't understand. Only our friends understand. Remember that? Who makes the most text messages, SMS messages? Teenagers. Who's overloading Facebook? Teenagers. Because the adults don't understand. The adults have never experienced such things. So let's not perform bhakti in that way. Let's always try to tap into the bank of experienced knowledge. Then we'll be successful. Anything else?